It's Friday, August 7th, 2009, and you're listening to episode 159 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 54 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
My name's John.
My name's Pat.
My name is Horace the Wanking Goat.
Wow.
It is indeed.
Voting on the power
does a
60...
goat wank?
Probably with his tongue. Most of the animal kingdom does.
True.
I'm jealous.
If they could do that, they would never accomplish anything else.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's why we have opposable thumbs and vast empires, and they have nothing. Voting on the Power 16-2 has ended as of this episode dropping. Unfortunately, because we're a week ahead, I don't have the results for you, nor do I have the winners for the Catalyst prizes. So we will come back with that in episode 160.
Wow. But let's just say it was extremely dramatic and thrilling up to the last vote count.
Actually, looking at the results, while there's still a week left to go, unless there's some radical reverse, it's a pretty strong victory in one direction.
No,
so,
really?
Yeah. So if anyone, well, it's too late now because it would have already been done. I was going to say you could change it, but actually you can't. 158 would have been your last chance to change it. Gen Con reminder, this is the last full week before Gen Con since we are going to be headed up to Gen Con.
I really need to ask off for that.
On Wednesday.
Yeah, you do.
Since we're headed up to Gen Con on Wednesday the 12th, this is your last full week. Get out to feartheboot.com. Click on the Gen Con link. Get signed up for the Gorilla events. Whether you want to be informed of when we're gaming or when we're going out for beers, or if you yourself have a game you want to run, be sure to get signed up for that. You are not going to want to miss this. It's going to be a ton of fun. I'm really looking forward
and,
to it.
And a new addition, Dan, to things if you want to keep track of what's going on with the Gorilla events at Gen Con and you are a Twitter user. You can, if you, of course, you know, obviously you should be following Fear the Boot on Twitter right now already, but you should, in addition.
Oh, wait.
What?
Chad's about to post something on Twitter.
No. He put the iPhone away. Don't
okay,
tell
right,
him.
Okay. But the other
muted my phone so it doesn't go off. You complete and total ass.
Uh huh. Yeah.
Carry on.
Oh, no, that's right. The other one to follow would be the Toft Bitch Twitter profile, and that is spelt Toftbch, correct? Is that how it's spelled, Chad?
Yeah, I believe so.
And either way, I'll link it off the show notes. So even if you can't figure out how to spell it, you can find it in the show notes.
Yes.
So no problem there either way. Chad.
Yes.
There is something.
2010 is a better movie than 2001.
I completely agree because
wow.
It actually had plot.
I know, but 2012 is going to kick them off.
And Roy Scheider.
Ray Scheider is that.
Ray is, yeah, he's
worked with Stanley L. Jackson. On,
yeah,
Scheider and Stanley L. Jackson.
Just for the record and for all the screaming fans out there who are wondering why multiple people could think that 2010 was better than 2001, that's not a united FTB opinion. Some of us are sane. Anyway, Chris, you were saying.
What's funny is there really is no united FTB opinion. There's someone on our forums was talking about getting fans on the show as guests to talk with us. Like, well, they're just going to pick fanboys who agree with them. It's like, well, agree with who?
We don't even agree
on much of anything.
Exactly. So, I hate you guys.
Agree with who or whom?
Whom. Actually, be whom.
That's right.
Agree with whom. You got to switch in he, him, they, them, who, whom. So it would be agree with whom. Pat, I deeply am sorry. After this episode, I'll go out to the garden and do the honorable thing. Chad.
Do it to whom?
Ooh,
in 157, you said something that I simply let slide because
I don't remember.
I do. Okay. The debate has been raging literally since episode one. This was the topic of episode one of Fear the Boot.
Why gamer stories suck?
No,
well, guess what? 3 years later, they still suck.
I think that didn't come up till episode two or three.
No, that was one.
Well, no, that was not the main topic. It may have been in one, but it was not the main topic.
We had like main topics and banter in that in episode one. I thought we just talked for 15 minutes and
we had our main topic of episode one. You made a passing comment about in 157, and I simply let it slide because I just presumed that people knew there was a disparity of opinion.
No, we all have just one single
opinion.
Yeah, well,
Fear the Boot's a monolithic organization, which we all agree upon.
No, they somebody said best. It's like, Dan has all of this recording equipment, all these computer and web and programming skills, and he just has this big soundboard that it's his voice modulated in different ways, and it's just him in this room by
himself. And it's all scripted.
It's all totally scripted, and it's just like him hitting buttons. I love BattleTech! I hate 2001! Here, I'll cue it. Oh, wait, I gotta do the Dan voice. I'll cue in John, and I like 2001! You guys suck at our insane!
Careful, chat, your high-pitched mocking voice. Somebody might unsubscribe.
That's right.
You said something in 156.
Oh, man. Okay.
You said something in 157 that I let slide just because I presumed people knew there was an intro.
Okay, what is it?
All right. The idea, and let me set up the whole thing here, but the idea that social skills should be RP'd instead of rolled.
Yes.
And you said that in 157, and I didn't reply because I just presumed people knew that we didn't agree on this. Mm-hmm. And from the comments that I saw in 157, apparently people do not know we don't agree upon this.
Yeah, because you're all into the game and the rules and the math. And
well, no, not even separately. Here's the thing. All right, let me set some ground ideas here. We all accept that this is a role-playing game, all right, and things should be role-play. No one's questioning that. We encourage role-playing, we being Fear the Boot, encourage role-playing in combat, conversation, anything that goes into the role-playing game. So simply falling back to the phrase, it's an RPG, so we ought to RP it, is not going to fly because that's something we all agree upon. But, for example, we would say that because you, Chad, may know how to culture penicillin, doesn't mean that your fighter in the medieval period is going to understand microbiology well enough to cure a disease. And in the same regard, I would say that your character may be more or less social than you are. So as wanting to encourage role play...
You know, I hate to interrupt, but...
Go ahead.
No, I actually love to interrupt.
Yeah, you do.
People keep trotting that out. People keep trotting out the whole argument, their entire argument of why there are social skills that need to be rolled, of there are people in role-playing games who play role-playing games who are socially inept, and they need to have
what?
That role
yeah,
to be able to
all
RP.
Of us.
And it's like, come on, we're role players. So we have like these gigantic books filled with all of these rules governing role-playing actions because there is a small percentage of people who have a stutter or are shy or can't look somebody in the eye when they talk because they're not a type A personality. Come on. Well, they have that because it's a game. There's a game aspect that people want to add into role playing.
Well, I would actually go with reverse tact of you may be more socially adept than your character is.
Well, even that way, it's a role playing game. You're playing in character. If you're doing it, if I am role-playing, we'll take extreme examples.
Okay.
My character is shy. I am obviously not.
Okay.
And I have to bluff the guard to get out of the jail cell. Well, my character is shy and is not very good at that, but I role-play the situation out where I really sell the guard and giving me his keys. That's called not playing in character.
Well, let me give
we
you
don't
an
need rules for that. We just say, you know, maybe you should play your character correctly or change your character.
Let me give you an example that you yourself actually complained about in a prior episode, which was we were playing a
can
game.
Can I get an audio clip?
I could dig one up. Where your character lied to the party and your role playing.
This Chad's, is going to haunt me for the rest of my freaking life.
But Chad's role playing was very convincing. Mm-hmm. But at some point, the game master, which was not me, I don't remember who it was, but the game master was not me, said, okay.
Yeah, roll your... See, here's
roll
what
your social skill, whatever it was.
What it was is he said, roll your bluff. Well, in the course, see, there's a greater story. There's a greater context to this that doesn't get explained because that story, it was with Luke and we were going back and forth and stuff. And it's the joke I always make about him railroading and me role-playing everything and him saying I role-play everything out to get around the rules. It's just a joke, you know? It's just this one situation. People keep hitting me with this. They keep saying, well, you said this in this way, using this context and this sentence. It was a joke! We were making fun of each other. I mean, it really did happen. Well, here's the thing. Here's the greater context of that story. I didn't even know there was a bluff skill. I had no clue on this earth that there was a bluff skill in that game. Every single person around the table had a bluff skill. So are you telling me it is a requirement for a human being to have a skill in lying?
To be convincing?
To be convincing,
yes.
Sure, and acting and all that sort of stuff. But you know what? Not every role-playing game has a bluff skill. So is every role-playing game...
I think most role-playing games have some kind of a social skill.
What if they don't?
What if
a role-playing game doesn't have like a bluff skill causes you to lie?
What if it doesn't have a shooting skill? Are we going to go to a target range to see if your character hit? I mean...
No, with the Chad method, you just describe how you hold your weapon and how the trajectory of the projectile goes toward the opponent.
No, you wouldn't do that either. But there are games where there isn't a shooting skill and there isn't combat like that. Well, there's combat, but it doesn't take place like that. There's plenty of games like that. I played one at the last Fear of the Con. It was fantastic. But what I'm saying is that, okay, yes, it was my fault. I didn't read the rules cover to cover. I took poetry instead of bluff or something like that. I took sleight of hands because I was a gambler instead of bluff. And then I had this role-playing scene where we role-played it out, and I was in character, doing in-character things. And then he looks at me, it's like, okay, that was great. That was some great role-play. Yeah, that was good. Now roll to see if that happened. And it's like, what? I have to roll to see if I did what I just did? I actually role-play characters failing. I actually role-play disadvantages. I role-play, trips and mistakes and stuff. And now... I can't roleplay that because I am not trusted by the mechanic of the game. Not by my GM or anything, but I'm not trusted by the mechanic of the game. The mechanic of the game says you cannot roleplay lying effectively. You need a mechanic to lie.
Well, I would try to cut the difference on that in this. Being a roleplaying game, I am going to reward good roleplay.
And also his motivation was not to say... There has to be a balance of fairness. The motivation was, I was about to screw up his plot.
Yeah, I know.
He wasn't prepared for it.
I picked that
like
one.
Like I said, it's this greater context of a story that people keep rolling to slam me
with. The albatross around my neck that I have to shed.
Yes.
Through some portion of Fear of the Boot, the albatross around my neck was like apologizing for things.
Mm-hmm.
And the new albatross around my neck is I keep giving examples, and people don't see the forest for the trees. They nitpick the examples to the point that they miss the broader point. Stone Shape, my God, I wish I could go back 3 or 4 episodes and not mention Stone Shape, because everybody missed the point of that episode
because of
the Stone Shape
all
example.
All the emails we got.
If I was running a role-playing game, which I'm not right now, but I probably will again soon. If I was running a role-playing game and somebody role-played out a scene and they had a really good bit of role-playing that seemed to fit their character, I would certainly give them a bonus. Maybe a bonus to the role, depending on the system, maybe a poker chip or something like that. But in the end, I would make them roll dice for the same reason as anything else. Just because you're good or bad at something does not mean your character is equally good or bad at something. That shocking piece of roleplay you came through with that just blew me away, your character may have fumbled, stuttered, and failed to deliver, or vice versa. That bit that you kind of stumbled over, your character may have delivered wonderfully. And that's why I will always, and this goes all the way back to episode 1.
I want to play my character. I don't want the dice to play my character.
Well,
I want to stumble my own lines.
But you are not your character. You're playing your character, but you are not your character, is the line that I would draw.
Well, I mean, at what point do you stop applying the rules to that? I mean, I want to go left or I want to go right down this hallway. Right is certain doom and left is painful danger. What choice would my character make? Well, you better roll your left or right skill.
Well, I would draw the line at this.
I mean, obviously, that's a total straw man, but that's
the role
kind of
your
point.
The role of the player is to decide what the character does, not to declare how well the character does it. That you may choose to say, okay, I'm going to try and jump over the spike.
What's wrong with the character telling you how well he does something?
The player telling me how well he does
it? The player.
Because the player is not the character. The player is manipulating the character.
But
the player is not the character. And so
what's wrong with what's wrong with like changing your thinking on that a little bit to say that it's my character I know what the character is good at. I know what the player is good at, or I know what he's bad at. And I want to play those good things. I want to play those bad things. I don't want the dice deciding for me.
Well, what I would say is this. Let's keep with the example of debate or social skills.
Sure.
You, Chad, have a strong personal presence. You're a charismatic person. You're a divisive person, but you're nonetheless a charismatic person.
Sure. Thank you.
But if you are playing a character, let's say, in, let's get out of D&D. Let's go to Shadowrun.
What about that little girl I played in that sci-fi game?
Vaguely remember.
Long
but let's
ago.
Say the point yeah. is you're playing
you know,
somebody.
I played a shy little 9-year-old girl.
Your character has a low social skill. And the thing, once again, that you, Chad, delivered so eloquently or explained so eloquently, and we could apply this, text did this all the time to me with science stuff.
Yeah.
Because T's a very intelligent, educated guy. He knew tons of science his character could not possibly have known. And I think I, as a GM, failed to make him roll against enough things. I just accepted that because Tex could explain it, it must work. And I should have been...
Well, it's the big brother thing.
Yeah, it really was. But... Anyway, I don't want to get into a huge thing on that, but
too late.
Yeah, we did. But I just wanted to.
No, it was good. It was good.
Say that there are different.
Well, and I also want to say that a lot of people look at like how I look at role playing games and stuff, and they're like, you know, that's not a role playing game. That's not a role playing game. And they make a lot of good points. It's a role playing game. You're taking the game out of it. You're taking the rules out. And you know what? They are absolutely right. I'm not saying that my way is the right way to role play. And in fact, when I run a game, I don't even apply all this stuff to my games because most people don't want that out of a game. Say all of us are sitting around a table and I'm running a game. Who am I to look at you guys and say, you know what? We're not running any dice in this campaign and we're not having any combats and we're not rolling any skills because I don't like that. That's not fair to you guys. You know,
well,
it's like
that in many ways is the eternal struggle is between, like you said, between role-playing and game.
I don't feel I need rules and dice just as much as someone feels that they do need all that. Who am I to look across the table at somebody and tell them, you don't need that to have fun?
Right.
Who am I to tell them how to have fun just as much as they're, how did they tell me to have fun? So you compromise. You know, you do some rules light stuff. You kind of bring other stuff up.
And I'll tell you what, Chad, that's fair. Your interpretation of that is right. That's the way you like to do it. And who are you to say that? Problem is when you're playing a game where you've set out from the beginning that, okay, the four of us or the six of us, we're going to play this game. And then this is basically how you determine the fate chance by using dice as opposed to extemporaneous speaking, you know, to do it. And, you know, and everybody else is using dice, but you just decide not to. What you're doing is you're not being consistent with everybody else.
I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that you have five people sitting around a table and they're playing five different rule sets.
No. Well, actually, what I'm saying is that everybody else in the game, like in your example or whatever, they are using the dice to do these things, but you aren't.
Why am now, I not? Because I just said that we're not playing different. We're playing all by the same rules.
Right, but what you're saying is instead of me rolling the dice for my bluff skill, you're going to play it out. And that's
what you said.
I'm listening to you wrong then because
you are listening to me wrong because I just said that if I'm running a game and everybody at let me make this simple. If I'm running a game and everybody at the table wants to use Savage Worlds and they want to play it by the book, they don't want to house rule it, they don't want to change anything else. Who am I to go against that?
Okay.
Why wouldn't that apply to me?
Well, okay, and I was going back to what we started with, I guess.
Why would that apply to me?
So just to make sure I'm following right, in the one example that keeps getting brought up, which once again, forest,
which is a joke.
Forest for the trees.
Yeah.
Super analyzing.
I've actually had people call me out on that example many times.
But,
like, you said this in this episode, but 15 episodes earlier, you said this
I'm getting bludgeoned to death with that right now, so I know exactly how you feel. But let's just so I make sure I understand.
Oh, poor us. Poor Fear the Boudoir. It's so terrible.
But the issue that was going on was really more of a failure to know the rules than to abide by the rules. Is that what you're saying? That you simply weren't aware of the social skills, which may have been a failing to
know. Let me put it to you this way. I wasn't aware of the importance of it. Imagine you're playing in a group that you've never played with before.
Okay.
And they've all played together, and they've all played together under GMX. And this isn't a story about anyone in particular. This is just an example I'm bringing up.
Okay.
and you make a character, you think it's a pretty good, solid character, but you didn't take the perception skill. Because to you, perception means it's something like you're walking down the street and three blocks away, boom, you make your perception check, you see a sniper on the roof. I mean, it's like totally out there, not inhuman, but it's totally out there, right? And it's this thing you'd use a skill for, right? But to them, a perception skill means you walk into a room and you start taking note of all the checkoff guns that are in the room, of all the plot MacGuffins that are in the room, of all the secret doors and hidden traps and the moles on people's faces that are come up later. And because they've played with this GM before, they know that. And every single one of them has perception because it's a must-have, must-take skill. But when you did it, you didn't even take it because, again, maybe you're playing a character that has vision problems.
Right.
And he can't see that far away. But in a room, he could. You know, whatever, whatever. He just
I follow.
Yeah, you follow the example. And so the bluff skill was a lot like that. Every single person had a bluff skill because they either had a bluff skill, an intimidate skill, or a negotiation skill. They had one of those, whether their character would have it or not. You know, well, they would take whatever flavor would fit their character, but they knew they had to have one. I didn't. I took skills that my character would have. After that example, people were making their social skills left and right. Every time somebody had to say something to a person that was beyond, hi, how are you? Good morning. Can I have scrambled eggs with that? It was roll your negotiation, roll your bluff, roll your diplomacy, roll this. And it's like, can we just roll play this and go with it?
Chris, I'm curious, where do you draw the line? How do you handle
he hates
games?
His players. He doesn't. They're lying, greedy bastards.
Oh, I know. Chris, it's the Maginot line between, that's what his GM screen is. It's like the Maginot line.
Yes.
For me, I'm kind of a middle ground because to me, I look at those skills as being, those are fallback skills. My primary thing is, can you role play it out? At times, yes, my players can do so. At times, they may not put their whole heart and soul into it, but I'm also picking up the vibe that they're not really feeling it, or perhaps the scene isn't as critically important as it could be, so, all right, let's default to a role. Or maybe they say what they want to say, or say, I'm trying to get this point across to the guy, but I can clearly tell they're not they as a player just can't get those words out. They know what they want to do, but role-playing wise, they can't spit it out. They can't get it out right. All right, well, then roll your dice and let's see what happens. So it really, you know, but if they role-play it out and it's good and I'm buying it, yeah, great. Even if it's a critical point where it's like, well, you got to get a target number of 8 to accomplish this task. If they did good role-playing, well, there you go. They got a 9, you know, so they made it. So for me, I do both because I do see a purpose for those skills. And at the same time, when you shoot, use your shooting skill. But if you're going to negotiate and if you're going to bluff and if you're going to talk, no, you actually have a little bit more options. You can role play that out or you can roll the dice. And it really, for me, it's a case-by-case basis. And I draw no hard and fast rules as to when that gets applied.
Okay, here's my take on this. I wanted to say this before, but I thought we'd sort of gotten away from it. But the way I look at it is this. I absolutely agree with you, Chad, in the point that when you are trying to do a bluff, and if you're good at talking, then you should role play it out. I think that's good because I encourage, you know, I think good role playing is what it's all about. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that you should be rolling that bluff skill. So what I think you really need to do in situations like that as the GM is you got to flip that around and say, okay, this player just did an awesome job talking his way, you know, the velvet tongue or whatever you know, kind of say. And then, you know, you've got to say as the GM, okay, well, my NPC or my bad guy or whatever is going to have to react to this. I think what the GM needs, he needs to be the one that makes the roll. So basically the bluff roll should be that the GM rolls it and maybe what it,
like
in that
a gullibility
case, it's,
roll.
So what it is that the bluff skill that the character has on their character sheet is not really for them to roll. Mm-hmm. It is for the GM to see it, take it, and then roll against his own person's take on it. Because really, when you get into that situation like that and you say as the GM, say, wow, that was a really great convincing speech. Well, do you just say, oh, okay, well, you automatically bluffed it because maybe your NPC is like a mastermind of wit and, you know, he's not going to be that easily bluffed or he's very perceptive. There's got to be something to it. But again, I think, you know, you do that role instead of making the players do it. I think that would be the way to do it.
Yeah, that's an interesting way
to look at it. So that way, you know, it sort of is a mismatch of the rules or whatever, because it's not really what the rules are. It's for your players to make that role. But I think in cases like that where you're doing social interaction, I think that's where, you know, that's where this really falls.
You know,
you've got to flip it around to that.
This is why I really love, even though I don't play or even get a chance to play them very much, this is why I think the indie game market is so great, is because they take, it's not for the mainstream. I think the vast majority of people want to do the role play, act it out, and they want to shoot some dice to do what you guys are saying. Maybe my character didn't, they tripped up on that. And again, my view is, hey, that's totally fine. Are you having fun? Yes. Guess what? You're doing it right.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that there's a certain percentage of the gaming population, like myself, who really want to think around some of these concepts sometimes. And like, I keep thinking of Dread, the game I played at Fear the Con 2, which was absolutely fantastic. It was completely diceless, totally numberless. And
was that the Jenga based game?
That was the Jenga one. And, you know, they had the Jenga stack there. And the only time you pulled a block, you had to do a pull, was basically in a life or death situation. If you want to bluff or lie or do something like that, you played it out. The character you made, the character sheet, was a questionnaire asking you questions that made you think about, that forced you to think about your character and forced you to think up things about your character.
It strikes me, though, that what's going on there is a question of how hard is the line between player and character.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in a game like D&D, Shadowrun, Battletech, any of the number, well, MechWarrior more specifically, but any of the numbers heavy games, there's a really thick line between the player and the character.
Yeah.
But whereas in a lot of these indie games, these storytelling games, these more interactive games, that the line between player and character becomes very, very blurred.
Well, you know,
this is why I don't know when we're going to do this, but at some point, I definitely want to get on the show somebody who really knows the ins and outs of the indie market. Because contrary to popular belief, we actually do keep up with the games a little better than we say. I mean, I have played 4th edition D&D. I've played the most recent edition 40K. I have New World of Darkness.
Here's my rant about that subject, and it's real quick, is that people are like, Fear the Boot only talks about games that went out of print 20 years ago, and they're so stuck in the past. It's like, no, we're giving advice that can hopefully, if we're doing it right, maybe kind of, sort of, can be broadly applied to the concept of role-playing games. It isn't about the game that we play.
All right, Chris, go ahead.
That's just my personal rant. Actually, I think it's a pretty fine joke.
Personally, my whole feeling is that the quote-unquote indie game market, as it is nothing but a label. Because honestly, I think that the whole idea of an indie game market is really, it's complete and utter bullshit to me, because it's, how can you have an independent angle on a market that is so, you know, remarkably small to begin with? You know,
it's like saying it's role-playing games are not boutique enough, they're not hip enough.
It's like me saying I'm the indie host of Fear the Boot, you know?
Yeah, you know, Chris, you haven't even heard of the role-playing games I've played. Yeah, they're that cool.
Yeah, they're so cool. You couldn't even, but the point is that I think a game is what you make of it. I mean, to the effect that you can be extremely rules light, but yet still really, you know, get down and be nitty gritty if you want to. And at the same time, you can have a very rules heavy game, your 3-0, your 3-5, and just wing it as much as you possibly want, because it's all what you make of it as you sit down at the table.
You know what amuses me about the indie game market is that it's always about this year's darling. Because it's
that's indie music.
It's indie anything.
Indie music, indie movies. I mean,
this year it's Mouse Guard. Cool game, great game. I'm actually probably going to pick it up at Gen Con. Don't know if I'll ever get to play it. Love the comic book. Guess what it was last year? Burning Wheel. Hey, both those are Luke Crane, right? I mean, he had two home runs in a row. Well, good for him.
Well, and also there's Spirit of the Sunshine.
Well, that wasn't last year. Last year's was Burning Wheel. This year's is Mouse Guard. Year before that was Dogs in the Vineyard.
Yeah.
Year before that was Spirit of the Century. You know, year before that is After. I mean, it's this year's darling
games. I think indie games have come to take on a different meaning. This is one of the things where Once again, we need to get someone on here who's really tapped into the indie market. But I think indie has become a euphemism for experimental.
Yeah.
For someone who's willing to try.
And
because
this market needs that.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. That's not a bad thing. That's a really great thing.
No, that because is a good thing.
They're, you know, the suits at the Big Six decide there is a
there even six anymore?
Well, yeah.
Like two?
The suits at whatever's left over decide there's a formula that works. And so that's how they're going to make the role-playing games.
And good for them.
Somebody who's working with a smaller team on a smaller budget can afford to take a gamble, and so they try something weird. And I really think, at least in my mind, what makes the indie market tick is experimentalism.
Yeah.
And it, like all forms of experimentalism, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Which actually will tie into a topic. I don't know if we're going to get to it today, and if not today, then we'll get to come back to it in 160, which is going to be one-shot games.
I kind of have a tangent on this one, too.
Okay.
I'd like to hear your guys' opinion on this. The way the economy is rolling and the way the market's rolling and stuff, do you guys think that the big role-playing game companies, and I'm talking like Wizards of the Coast, White Wolf, that sort of thing, the guys who make the big expensive games and sell the most amount of them, do you think that those guys will ever go under to where there won't be anything that we would consider a big mainstream role-playing game producer and it'll all be indie games of
will
one stripe or another?
Will a company go under? Yes. Will that company be replaced? Sure. I think...
Do you think that the levels of playership will go down? Like, will people say, D&D's no longer being produced. I'm out.
No, I don't think so. I think of everyone I've talked to, everybody's in love with the hobby. Now, there may be titles they like, but it's not a title that's
indie,
keeping them in the
mainstream
market.
D&D.
It's like everyone has a favorite movie, but if you wiped out every copy of that movie from the face of the earth, it's not like they'd stop watching movies.
If Hollywood, God forbid, ever gets nuked, people will still be making movies.
Yeah, and it's the same
people
kind
still
of
be
thing.
Watching them.
You know, would at some point Hasbro decide that Wizards of the Coast isn't what they want to do and shut it down? Sure, that's a conceivable future. Mm-hmm. Would that be the end of gaming? No, I think somebody else would rise up and take their place.
Well, would it be the end of mainstream gaming? Do you guys foresee a future where gaming goes to just small press, PDF print, in smaller indie title, like lots and lots of smaller indie titles, or even homebrew free stuff?
You are cracking the entire nut of new media there.
Yeah,
because I mean,
that's what I do. I bust nuts.
The same questions being asked of movies and television.
Did that actually take you a minute to get back?
No, it didn't. I find it funny.
You know, but the same questions being asked of news. Mm-hmm. With the blogs, you know, competing with the major newspapers, television versus YouTube or Hulu.
I tell you what, and I don't think
I don't have an answer for you.
If I can make a prediction, it's going to be I don't think that you'll ever see one of the indie guys take down one of the big boys. I don't think we'll ever say, well, it's so-and-so versus Watsy. Well, it's so-and-so versus White Wolf. It's so-and-so versus I don't even know who the number three guy is. And the little guy won. I think that it's going to be a big guy collapsing, like, say, FASA, collapsed under its own weight and legal
problems.
Well,
it's going to be the same thing. Hasbro is going to make a decision about Watsy, or CCP is going to make a decision about White Wolf. Yeah. That is, it's going to be corporate. Yeah, it's people that don't love
it's going to be a business
decision.
It's
people that love the money more than they love the hobby.
When you have this much money involved in a corporation like that, it is a business decision. It has to be a business decision. It can't be, we're going to throw away $2 million a year budget on a project that's not making any money because we love the project. That's $2
million.
Right. That's people's livelihoods.
All
right.
Go
ahead, Pat.
No.
No, you never speak. Go ahead.
As long as you've got it, like you said, as long as there's a market for it, there's always going to, it's going to be there, because like you said, it is a business. So I think more the question is not so much that, you know, if the big game, you know, the big gaming companies, will they just go away, period? It's, you know, will the market, will the people not want role-playing games? Because that's
will the proletariat rise up.
And the only thing that'll ever push them away is if there's a deluge of crap. I mean, if the quality remains as high as it's remaining, and that's whether it's produced by WotC or if it's produced by, you know, Mom and Dad's Pretty Good Basement Games, it doesn't matter. As long as the quality of game is good and people find it, they're going to enjoy it, and then people will continue to play.
Right, so there'll be a market, and as long as there's a market, there will be somebody to provide. Somebody, I mean, if one falls, somebody's going to come in and take their place. They're going to provide to that market. If the market does go away, then so will the industry.
And you know it's what? If aliens invade, completely take over the Earth, and declare all role-playing games completely banned, I think you'll still see people playing.
That'll only help the cause.
That will only help the cause. Hey. You'll see people making their own games and playing all their old stuff.
Mm-hmm. A lot of copies of the role-playing game will sell when that happens.
Oh, my God.
And that's what I was going to say, too, is that, even if for whatever reason role-playing games or the role-playing big companies were just to go away, that still doesn't take away all the old stuff that's there. People are still going to play that because you're not just going to say, I'd never play the old stuff because it just, I don't like
it. Well, let me ask you to wait 2 years and be like, where's 4.5? All our 4.0 books are about to disintegrate.
Well, let me ask you guys the second question off of that, and it's the scarier one. It has nothing to do with the market. It throws the same question at the people. Do you think role-playing games will die? Do you think that?
No.
Do you think people will stop playing?
We've talked about this before.
It's easy to say that now. I mean, we're going to Gen Con. Gen Con has 70,000 people, and that's just a small fraction of the worldwide role-playing market.
That type of thing. Why? Because, I'll tell you why.
Chris, because, impart your ancient wisdom upon me.
Because first of all, it's as much as we joke about it internally within the community itself, the reputation that it has had about being that geeky pastime, that is slowly being shed away. And as each successive 5 or 10 year generation comes up, it's becoming less and less of a big deal. And that's partially helped by the fact of the incredible success of console gaming, computer gaming, the way sci-fi and fantasy films have become, in a certain sense, very much mainstream. You know, you look at 200,000 people showing up for San Diego Comic-Con this year.
I think Nerd Chic is a fad.
But I think, though, that this type of thing, that I don't think that game, because games are just a natural offshoot of that, so I don't think that it will die for all those various reasons.
And I'm one of those guys, I'm pissed off that we're going mainstream. Whoa. By God, I want to stay.
You enjoyed the persecution.
Yeah, I don't like this mainstream crap. I mean, you know, it's like tattoos and porn. It's mainstream now.
You were a nerd who got beat up because, damn it, you earned your right to play that. Now these kids are just coming
that's
in
right,
here.
Because it's the cool thing to do.
Let me correct your number, sir, a little bit. Gen Con's not 70,000. It's between 30,000 and 40,000.
I thought it was.
No, it's big. It ain't that big. But it is damn big.
Sure.
Secondly.
Well, it's certainly no Fear the Con.
Well, no. not certainly in quality, at least. but I will say this. And in terms of, will role-playing change in nature? Sure. We've seen that even over the past 5 years. The move from super crunchy systems to a lot more quick play systems. If you want to go back maybe 10 years, the introduction of the collectible card game or the collectible mini games or things like that. There's now things where they're experimenting with tie-ins between the card games, role-playing games, and video games. And so will we see gaming change? Absolutely. But the fact is that mankind has sat around a table, a campfire, a log, or whatever, and told stories from time immemorial.
And you know what? There's role players who will look at you and say, that has absolutely nothing to do with my hobby.
I know, and quite frankly, I don't
give
a
damn. And I think they're wrong.
The pedantic argument over what constitutes a role-playing game, in my mind, is it's
boring.
A waste of energy. Is what it is. I can't even say it's right or wrong. It's just a waste of energy. Yeah. But the fact is that that's what role-playing is. That role-playing is the desire of the human mind to imagine, to create, and to interact. And that desire is wired into us, and it's not going anywhere.
My definition of a role-playing game is pretty simple. It's just 2 points. Are you telling a story, and are you having fun?
Well, and I'd actually go slightly different things. Are you telling a story, and are other people able to affect that story in ways you can't control?
Yeah. Because I'll give you that. Totally.
Because I played role-playing games where I wasn't having fun.
Yeah.
But
But damn, you know, it, now I have to revise my rules.
But, you know, I that's why I think, will role-playing change its nature?
Yeah.
Certainly. People are trying new ideas all the time. Some catch on, some don't. The hobby's going to evolve. Video gaming has evolved. Fallout 3 is very, very different than Wasteland.
Yes.
And that's fine. I accept that as just part of the way that time marches on. But I don't think that you will ever see the death of the hobby, because the desire of human beings to sit around and imagine and contribute and tell stories is
It's not even that. It's also the desire and drive of human beings. They like to play games, whether it's of an athletic nature or whether it's of a gambling nature, which involves rolling something. There's still that tactile necessity amongst humans to have something, and then to combine the two and to build a story. It's a natural progression.
Chris, I have to totally agree with you, because you sit on the mighty perch of ancient history. You have the perspective of the old ones.
That's right.
Absolutely.
The reason I bring that up is, and I have to take sort of an opposite stance on it, because I love history. To really like history, you kind of have to take this long view. You have to take yourself out of your times and stuff. And I look at role-playing games, and role-playing games have been around as long and longer than I've been alive. So to me, from my just my perspective outside of my knowledge, they have been around forever. That's what it seems like. Role-playing games have always been around. They've always existed. Role-playing games as we know them. But you know what? They haven't always existed. And I'm not talking like ancient Roman times didn't have role-playing games. I'm talking like when Chris was a child, they didn't have role-playing games. And Chris is older than anyone else in the room.
Not that structured, but the idea that you would have a game where you pretend to be someone you're not, and there's any kind of structure rules to it. I mean, you can find...
Well, you could say...
Spiritual or...
Are you saying that Cops and Robbers is the spiritual successor to role-playing games?
Well, or predecessor.
Predecessor, yeah.
And not exactly, I mean, because it would lack rules. But presumably...
No, you have to play a cop, or you have to play a robber. The cops have a role, the robbers have a role.
Well, if you had rules to it, you know, then...
You know what, though? But there's that natural progression, because it's the same way when you're playing with your Legos. And I used to do this. You got your Lego spaceships, and you're flying them around, and you're shooting at each other, and so then, for some reason, you get the idea to decide whether or not you're Han Solo character in this ship, who maybe you've named Mark Starboard or something, and you've got him in there, and but he's being chased,
Chris,
and so now
Mark Starboard character.
Now you've got to try and see if these enemy ships hit him. Well, have some fun with it, because you get bored of
like
doing the same thing over and over again.
No, it's not.
It's Mark Starver sounds like a porn actor.
Starburst, maybe not Starburst. Yeah,
that actually was the name of the guy I would play when I played Star Wars.
That's awesome.
I was Mark Starboard. And because nice. we had at the end of our road, and this is not a gaming story, but we had an old flatbed trailer.
Tells you that it's a gaming
story. Yeah, no, it's it not. Totally is.
But we had an old flatbed trailer that was on my parents' property that was actually kind of a split level flatbed trailer. And that was our Millennium Falcon. And we would sit on the upper level and pilot the flatbed trailer through the stars.
Was it a gooseneck? Was it a gooseneck trailer?
What the hell's
a
gooseneck trailer?
Oh, 1300
I
totally gotcha.
Never mind. You're not cool enough for me.
I'm not a trucker, so I have no idea. I had trucker pants when I was in high school, but
somebody out there in FTB land will know what a gooseneck trailer is.
I just think that role-playing games are wonderful. Role-playing games are cool. They've been around since God. They'll be around forever. Yay, 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 role-playing games. But there's another part of me that says, as cool as they are, I can see a time when people will stop playing role-playing games. And it won't be we need to stop this childish activity. It's more like just fewer and fewer people play it. And it's like comic books.
Or building model rockets or something.
Comic books are a staple. They're an institution. They're American. They're this, that, and the other. And, you know, they've only been around, as we view comic books, since the 30s.
And the industry's collapsing.
And the industry's collapsing.
People are still reading them for some reason. Same thing with newspapers. Same thing with radio. Same thing with TV.
Fewer and fewer and fewer people are reading them.
Just because fewer and fewer people are reading them does not mean they're dead. Just like Pat said, there's still a market for them.
The people who are reading them are getting older, and one day those people who are reading them will die.
Yes, and no doubt about it, but there's still...
And there won't be as many people to take their place, and then after that...
Well, maybe
there'll be a resurgence.
We do not... Now, granted, this may not be the best example, but I'm Fear the Boot, so I don't give a... We don't get the newspaper at home. We stopped doing it a long time ago because there's no, all the ads that my wife wants to look at, she can see online. All the news we want to get, we can get online. However, my kids still get joy out of having the Sunday comics, and I'll take them from work and bring them home, and they still love reading, having that in their hand, reading the comics. And I think that they will continue to do so as they get older and have fond memories and still transfer that to their own children.
Tree killer.
I think there's a semantic difference here that we're getting into. And I'm going to draw from a Battletech analogy.
Because that's all the only game that you've ever played that, in your that whole really came life. From
that really came out of left field.
Is that a diceless system, Dan? That sounds like one of those crazy indie things. Is that going to be the big hit this year at Gen Con?
It almost did become a diceless system because we were playing with one guy who in the middle of combat just said, "I'll just say all my weapons hit." That was very generous of you, Alex.
Yeah. he absolutely insisted
but
on it.
We had this difference between mechs that were destroyed mm-hmm. and mechs that we called AGAD. AGAD standing for as good as dead. Mm-hmm. That you have a mech where technically, okay, it's got its two legs, it's got its center torso and head, it can walk, it's down to one hex of movement, it has no weapons left, it's got, like, even if it did have a weapon left from all of its cockpit hits and whatever, it's got a +9 million to hit anything. Mm-hmm. It's worthless. And the question you'd have to ask yourself is, okay, do I really want to bother finishing this thing? Or given that it's so harmless anyway, is my weapons fire really better off somewhere else? And so we would define a mech as being dead or AGAD, as good as dead. And I think the semantic difference we're getting into here is Chad's question is, will there come a point where role-playing games aren't dead, but they're AGAD?
Yeah.
They are such a niche. They are such a small little thing that are played by so few people, at least in the form we recognize them today. Now, it may have evolved and morphed in some radically new direction to where, if sitting here today, if somebody handed me a role-playing book from 2020, I wouldn't even recognize it as a role-playing game. But role-playing games as we recognize them today in the year 2000...
I hate to tell you this, but 2020 is only, what, 11 years away?
Well, yeah, but think about how much has changed in 11 years of role-playing. I mean, it's a fairly fast-moving industry. But my point being, fine, 2030, 2050, whatever you want to go with. But the point being that the question here, I think, is semantically, will role-playing games ever die? And in Chris and I's sense, we are arguing they will never die. But I think, Chad, the approach you're taking is, will they ever be as good as dead?
Right.
They are so niche, they are so lightly consumed that, yeah...
People still make their own candles at home.
Right, yeah, but there's, I say, even at home, but home being my parents' house, not my house, we actually have a mold for making your own candles, and we have a mold for making your own musket balls.
Right.
Needless to say, we don't own a musket, much less make musket balls out of lead.
You need a shot tower.
Oh, but I bet at Christmas you do.
But... The point, I'm stuck on that one too.
Turkey, ham, pie, and musket balls.
I totally get what Chris is saying. And Dan, I'm going to tell you what I want for Christmas this year.
I want a
bag full of musket balls.
You're going to have to get me a block of lead to even start with.
On it. That's why we have the internet.
No shit.
I wonder how much it costs to ship a block of lead.
I'm going to find out.
Probably a lot.
My point being,
I'll chip
though,
in. I want some too. Yes. I
think so. You want musket balls too for Christmas?
Yeah.
I'll leave it up to listeners to make their own sweaty balls joke at this point in time.
I think the semantic thing we're getting stuck on here is, will role playing games, to put it in the way Chad's using it, ever be so small, so niche, that they might as well be gone? There's still a few websites, there's still a few companies left that are clinging on to a dead hobby, like model rockets, or chemistry sets. But really, nobody in the mainstream is going to do it. Yeah. Gen Con's going to have 4,000 people, not 40,000 people.
I don't know. People shooting off rockets in the desert still gets on TV. How much role playing stuff gets on TV? Yeah, but
it was bigger before. And I think the answer the answer is that you can't answer that question. You can't. We're just not going to be able to predict the future. Not. You know, because
but we're Fear the Boot. So
as hobbies go, is this hobby going to go the way of model rockets, or is it going to go the way of, say, like football? Because way back in the day, football was like a hobby.
And I really hope this hobby goes in the way of model rockets. Because I thought the XPRIZE was really damn cool.
Okay,
well, and I think Virgin Galactic is an awesome concept. So, yeah, I hope we do take role playing games into space.
But Mouse Guard's not going to put you in orbit. Yeah. I hate
not that. Yet.
Luke Crane.
Yeah, Luke Crane, you work on that. Man,
I'm sure he's a terribly nice guy, but that to me is a game I think I would never play.
Have you ever read the comic?
No.
John and I met him.
I imagine he's probably extremely nice.
He wore a Fear the Boot shirt to Gen Con last year.
Well, he is nice.
I totally want to pick up a copy of Mouse Guard. I don't... Now, Dan's going to point his little bony finger at me and go...
I have an Allen wrench I'm playing with right now, yes. So I might point that at you.
I really want to pick up a copy of Mouse Guard at Gen Con this year, and I really want to play it, but I don't think my current group will want to play it.
I'd be one to try it.
I'll play it.
Yeah.
Try it.
There's three out of the...
I'm not saying I'll like it, but I'll be willing to try it. I don't know.
No, you have to like it. That's part of the conditions of playing.
Anything that you pick up that's an indie game, you have to really like it.
If you don't like it, that's just because you didn't understand
it. Exactly, that's my favorite one. If you didn't like it, you didn't understand it.
You don't give me my indie games, Mom.
I hear that so many times.
All right.
Dad, you keep trying to push 3.5 on me, so F you.
So now that we've gone through the banter topic, what's the regular topic?
I was saying, I had two other topics for today. We got to neither of them, or neither, if you prefer. So,
and I actually had something I wanted to comment about that we talked about last episode.
Well, oh, my God.
All right, well, Chris, do me a favor. Take out a pen right now.
I have
a pen
because I've been taking notes for my preview.
Write it down.
I've got it right here.
I have at least two topics for 160, and depending on how it goes, maybe we have 161 and 162 between what I've got and what you've got. So write it down. We'll come back to it.
I have to say, Dana, I have to shake your hand. I really enjoyed the debate.
Well, thank you.
Early on. I really did enjoy it.
Well, Chris, I thought mine was going to be brief, too, and it ended up running the entire hour.
I felt like being tangenty tonight. So, I felt like taking the show off the rails.
All right. So
I was drinking a Guinness 250, so I really didn't give a what we talked about.
I was sleeping on the microphone cover.
I'm not even kidding. I'm going to go home and have a blue moon while I play City of Villains.
All right. So for...
On the Pinnacle server. On the villain side.
Yes. Great place to join us. Yes.
I'm going
to
watch True Blood.
Although we're not promoting this. This is not an official Fear the Boot
guild.
We're
promoting it. We're just not running it.
That's thank God.
We're just not. It's not our guild.
You know, I want you to know the past two guilds we've ran, I've specifically told you I have no desire to be an officer and to be involved with running the guild. And
but
guess
you are
who gets made an officer? Guess who gets eventually made guild master? Guess who gets running
Chad
the...
lift us up where we belong.
All right, so anyway.
Thank you, John. Thank you
so
much.
No problem, Chris. I run with that.
Sometimes they just piss into the wind here with some of the things they say, and thank God somebody picks them up.
I sniff your piss. A little bit of it falls onto my shoes.
A little Fear the Boot shower.
All right, so thank you guys for tuning in. We've already got at least...
And if you've stayed with us to this point... Thank you.
You are a true and true fan.
We've got at least two more shows lined up, so thank you guys for tuning
with
in.
With actual topics.
And we will catch you next time.
Later.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2009. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.